It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Oh, we got a great panel for you. Editor-in-Chief from CNET, Connie Guglielmo, is here. Turns out, I didn't realize this, she was also at the there at the beginning of Wired Magazine. We'll talk a little bit about that. From WGBH in Boston, and of course, Mac Break Weekly, Andy Iannacco stops by. And from theregister.co.uk, Ian Thompson will talk about the mainstreaming of crypto, the Webb telescope receiving its first photos, the Samsung Galaxy Tab. It's so big. Is it a laptop replacement? And France says, go ahead, take our Meta. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 862, recorded Sunday, February 13th, 2022, A Game Old Bird. A reminder to all our TWiT listeners, it's our annual survey time once again to help us understand our audience a little bit better. We want to make your listening experience better, and it also helps us sell advertising. We don't want to track you, so it's completely voluntary. But if you can take a few minutes to let us know a little more about you, we'd sure appreciate it. Go to twit.tv/survey22, and thanks in advance. This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by Mint Mobile. If saving more and spending less is one of your top goals for 2022, switching to Mint Mobile is the easiest way to save this year. Get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free. Go to mintmobile.com/twit. And by BetterHelp. Join over 1 million people who've taken charge of their mental health. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/twit. And by Worldwide Technology and Intel. With an innovative culture, thousands of IT engineers, application developers, unmatched labs and integration centers for testing and deploying technology at scale, WWT helps customers bridge the gap between strategy and execution. To learn more about WWT, visit wwt.com/twit. And by Checkout.com. Modern businesses need flexible payment systems that can help them adapt to change, grow, and scale fast. Checkout.com is a leading cloud-based global payment solution provider. Request a free no-commitment demo at checkout.com/twit. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news with a panel of brilliant journalists. We're thrilled to get Connie Guglielmo back on our microphones, editor-in-chief of CNET, big shot. Look at that beautiful set. It's marvelous. Thank you for being here, Connie.
My pleasure.
I say that because I was always jealous of CNET's CES studio. It always looks beautiful.
Well, not for the past 2 years, because we haven't gone, right?
We miss it, yeah. I'm going to ask you about that in a second. But first, let's say hi to Andy Iannacco. You know him as host of Mac Break Weekly. He's here slumming with us on TWiT. It's nice to have you.
No, it's nice to have something to do professionally on a Sunday, because otherwise it's like, you know what, it's 3, but I bet I could sleep for another 2 hours.
This is a good day to shop, because the streets will be empty.
Yes.
Because everybody's watching some game or other. Andy, of course, the host of the Material Podcast, regular Mac Break Weekly, and regular on WGBH in Boston, among other things. This would have been a good time, Andy, to announce the launch of your giant new project, but...
Yes, in the middle of the Super Bowl when nobody's paying attention to anything.
That's exactly,
I would be consistent with my business acumen and self-promotion, but I'll give you that.
Also with us, Ian Thompson from theregister.co.uk, my favorite Brit. Hi, Ian.
Hey there, how's it going?
You're the Ted Lasso of tech. No, wait, but that's backwards. I got it wrong. But anyway, welcome. Good to have you.
Always fun.
You don't care about hand egg or whatever it is they call this Super Bowl thing.
Oh, well, the runny, kicky, throwy game. it's fun. I'm just astonished that you managed to stretch a one-hour game out to 4 hours of adverts.
But you said that on Twitter, and I had to point out that somebody did the math. It's Quartz, actually, and there's only 11 minutes of action in a normal football game.
It doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, the way you've got the rules set up, it seems to be an awful lot of just hanging around, waiting for singers, dancers, advertisers to get them to get their money in. You know,
if you go to an American football game, there, and I noticed this at a 49ers game, there's a guy with big orange gloves. They go to his elbow, giant orange gloves. And I asked my wife, "Who's that?" She said, "That's the TV timeout guy." And they watch this guy. He's got big orange gloves because he is listening to New York. And they say, "Okay, stop. We got a commercial." And he goes, "Wait," with his big orange gloves. And then they watch him until he says, "Okay, you can begin again." And they're just standing around. TV commercials are the most important, as you can tell. In fact, I think, Connie, you agree that TV commercials are the most important part of the Super Bowl.
Well, somebody has to pay all of those salaries and for whatever it costs to rent a stadium. I don't know. That's a lot of money.
Do you want to know how much it costs to buy an ad on the Super Bowl?
Sure.
$6.5 million for 30 seconds.
Oh, good grief.
$6.5 million for 30 seconds. And AT&T apparently used this opportunity to announce that their 5G was 5 gigs. I don't think that's
apparently
right.
They're still asking their dancers to dance for the exposure, not
for free.
To get paid.
For free. Yeah.
Which is shameful.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Anyway. That's fine. You know, it's an American pastime. And so, of course, capitalism rules. It's number one. It's the number one job of capitalism. Yeah. So
can I just say, in American football's defense, that when our guys throw to the ground and appear to be injured, they are actually suffering lifelong debilitating career-ending
injuries. That's a good point.
Not like this, my knee.
For American football fans, when we watch UK football, we watch soccer, the guy is running fast, somebody touches him, he falls to the ground and writhes in agony. We think, what is he talking about?
But you see, there's the rub. You're watching soccer, which is basically a game of people, yes, who will cheerfully dive in front of the referee if they think it gets them a point. Rugby, on the other hand, which
no,
I used to
you
play.
Can really get hurt.
You know, yeah, I've seen a guy with his ear half ripped off. Oh, yeah. Back on his head, yeah. Run back out onto
yeah,
the field.
Exactly.
Another one punched his kneecap back into place after getting it dislocated.
Yeah, at least football players are armored, as you say, but rugby players, man, they're on their own. You go out there and good luck.
Well, they've got a British rugby team and an American football team to play each other's games, and they both came out of it saying that the opposition had it harder because the rugby players were like, with all this armor on, you can really muck someone up. And the American football players says, "I'm not wearing armor. I'm going to get really mucked up." You know?
I remember, and it wasn't that long ago, maybe, I don't know, 20 years ago, the very first technology advertisement on the Super Bowl. And I think it was Pets.com.
Apple do the 1984 one of the Super Bowl?
Yes.
Okay, that would be a tech advertiser. You're right. And then there was.
I don't know if that was the first one, though.
Well, I think it was, and there was a long drought after that. Maybe I'm thinking the first internet advertiser on the Super Bowl, because really, I mean, Apple, IBM, you know, the big computer companies probably have been doing that for a long time.
Pets.com still, though, had a great tagline, which is, "Because pets can't drive." That was fun.
I think I'm trying to remember the. I guess what I should say is really the first .com, right? That would be more appropriate. Because then, you know, like the internet has come of age when they have .coms. Now they're all over the Super Bowl. I mean, that's all you see is .com advertisers. Here's a list from Business Insider of 8 .coms that spent millions on Super Bowl ads and no longer exist. And number one, look at the doggy holding the mic, pets.com.
It was a bizarre idea. I mean, it's on a level of Uber for bad economics, but yes, it's...
In 2000, there was a ill-fated Super Bowl commercial for a company called Epidemic.com. I don't think they would do well these days.
Yeah, there's a New York Times article from the weekend basically calling it the crypto bowl for all the commercials this year.
It'll be
that
all crypto.
Involve blockchain at some point.
Yeah. And I'm not sure I think that. Actually, I'm curious. Maybe we could this be our first topic of the day. Crypto really has gone mainstream. In fact, there is a stadium in Los Angeles, not where the Super Bowl is being played. That's SoFi Stadium. But then the old Staples Center is now Crypto.com Arena. Crypto has gone mainstream. I worry that there are a lot. That means there are going to be a lot more suckers. But maybe whenever I say that, my kids say, okay, boomer. Connie, where do you come down on NFTs, blockchain, crypto?
I mean, your point is correct. They have become much more mainstream. People know what crypto is and they know what Bitcoin is or Coinbase and all that stuff. Do I think, though, that means that there's massive opportunities for scams? Absolutely.
Yeah.
There are no experts who can tell you. There are purported experts. I think we were going to talk about some scamsters online who claim that they can give you advice on how to buy and sell crypto, but it's the early days. It's the wild, wild west. And in the wild, wild west, who makes the money? Most of the people are the people selling the picks and shovels, right? Not the people who are doing the shoveling. So it's early days, and there's going to be a lot of scams.
And I think because it's early days, a lot of the people, including maybe some Super Bowl advertisers, who are really promoting crypto and NFTs and all this, are the people who got in early who want to sell and make dollars off of the crypto, as opposed to people who really are believers. But then there are, and I'll agree, there are the true believers. And certainly, blockchain is not going to go away. Cryptocurrencies, who knows, maybe the future of currency. I'm not saying that. I just think that a lot of speculation is going on, and that means risk. The other big advertiser on the Super Bowl, it's been on NFL all season, is, fantasy sports and betting, gambling. I think they go hand in hand. Gambling, crypto. You know, two sides of the same coin. You think so? Andy, you agree?
Well, one of the biggest advertisers of all, like, big-time sports has always been financial services companies.
True.
And this is part of crypto. It's not just the idea of investors who are trying to get, or even basic people who are trying to get in and trying to make money off of crypto exchanges, but also it's an opportunity for all of these exchanges to get in new customers and make money, not necessarily off of cryptocurrency itself, but off of all of the fees and services that they can charge investors. So and on top of everything else, although I agree 100% that there's a very, very double-digit percentage, I think, that's motivated by we need to have a new wave of suckers come in to prop up the earlier waves of suckers and the initial waves of now millionaires and billionaires. But a lot of it is that we're really still at the age where people understand a lot. It's still absolutely mumbo-jumbo to so many people. Last week on Boston NPR, I talked about crypto laundering arrests, and I thought that I had laid the groundwork very, very well. But the basic understanding of what a digital currency is, what a crypto-based currency is, and how it works, it's kind of like trying to explain personal computers to people in 1978. They just need they don't understand the verbs, the nouns, the adverbs, or anything. You really do have to, and as part of our responsibility, I think, as tech commentators, to make sure that people understand that here is what a single Bitcoin is. Like, no, it isn't just like moving numbers from one account to another account. It is an actual thing that you can drop down a sewer and lose completely. All this basic stuff. So if it makes people more aware and hopefully puts, by next year, a lot more people on their guard that this isn't just a system where you put $100 in and you get $2,000 out the next month, that hopefully will be a good thing.
And I suppose, you know, you could have made the same argument. You said financial services. Insurance ads are all over NFL football. And I suppose you could make the same argument. Insurance is a gamble too, right? They're betting they're going to make money on you. You're hoping that your house burns down. Wait a minute, no, that's wrong. But you get what I'm saying.
But the thing is, it isn't a currency at the moment. It's still just a speculation vehicle. You know, I mean, it's not like people are actually going out and buying stuff with this with Bitcoin and the rest of it. What they're doing is speculating on its potential rise or fall.
Well, NFTs particularly seems to be that. It's almost as if
money
Bitcoin grows thought, how can we get people to give us money for our Bitcoin? And they said, NFTs! Again, there's going to be some value down the road. It's not a bad idea to have provenance stored in a decentralized, immutable database called blockchain. We were talking on the tech guy today with Sam Abul-Samad, who told me that Alfa Romeo has announced that, their new vehicle will have its repair history stored in blockchain as an NFT, which is, on the face of it, sounds like, oh, that's great. So you will be able to, if you're looking at a car, be able to get without, you know, because it's blockchain, so it's nobody controls it, be able to see what the repair history. But then Sam added one little tiny piece, which is only Alfa Romeo dealers will be able to write to the blockchain.
Of course.
So it really is, and this is a perfect example of a good idea that ends up being a lock-in for dealers doing your repair.
I will say about cryptocurrencies, to Andy's point, education, that's the part of the process we're in right now. And that makes a lot of sense because it's early. As soon as the government starts talking about creating a virtual dollar, which the Fed has been, the EU, they're talking about a crypto euro version. Those are all like a, you know, they're not a 2022 thing. They're going to start talking more seriously, I think, in 2023 and beyond. They know that virtual form of our currency will be part of the future. And I think that's when more people will start to understand, especially if you're going to get paid in virtual dollars euros.
In a way, we are. I mean, my paycheck, I never see a dollar bill. My paycheck is just bits that get transferred to some place where I store my bits, and then I give my bits to somebody else when I buy something. There's really no currency involved.
Yeah.
The only difference between that and blockchain is that blockchain has a decentralized ledger as opposed to my bank having my ledger and that kind of thing. And so we're almost there, right? I mean, how often do you use cash these days?
Well, in addition, of course, the other necessary difference between is that a dollar is backed by a federal government and a treasury that's going to control inflation and make sure that you don't have that the value of a dollar doesn't go so wildly that it really disrupts your ability to use it. But this, I hope that Bitcoin and other digital currencies doesn't become just associated with, you know, it's not a digital beanie baby. It's a fad that got blown out very, very quickly by people who are just speculating and turning something silly, because it's a very, very powerful concept. There are so many people, even in the United States, who simply don't have access to banking, period. And the ability to have some of the power of what you're just talking about having the ability to move money from one place to another quickly and instantly without a whole lot of transfer fees, without a whole lot of having to sign documents and prove to somebody that you have a legal authority to be inside this country and to have a job. It will allow these people to get jobs, get paid, pay their rent, pay utility bills, pay things like that without having to live on the fringes. And that's a lot of where a lot of the exploitation and abuse happens, when you have people who are forced to, for whatever circumstance or another, to live on the fringes. So it's as Connie said, it's early days. Hopefully these growing pains will shrug them off, and it'll realize some of its potential to really help humanity.
Yeah, I'll sharpen the attacks from the Bitcoin bros, because I'll get them. I am not against the technology. I think there's a lot of future in it, and I agree with you and Connie both. We need education, and there is at root something really sensible about this. But right now, Wild West makes it a little bit risky and dangerous. And it always makes me nervous to see all the advertising, all the hype around it, because that's when I go, you know, hey, calm down. This isn't a get-rich-quick scheme. Don't tweet.
I think for some
Except
people,
it is.
They're viewing it as is. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
I'm moving to Puerto Rico, baby. Actually, a couple of people who did think it was a get-rich scheme what they thought was they could rob a Bitcoin exchange and be anonymous. Turns out, no, the Department of Justice has charged two people, Ilya Lichtenstein and Heather Morgan.
We have to view the video. That video is just car crash television.
as the individuals responsible for attempting to launder 119,754 Bitcoin stolen from Bitfinex, a cryptocurrency exchange, in 2016. And I think the assumption was, oh, you know, it's on the blockchain, I'm anonymous now. But as soon as you try to collect, I think I'm not sure which video you're talking about, the one from Razzle Khan, her rap video. has now been made private, unfortunately.
Oh, really? Oh, damn. That's a pity. Oh,
finally, she discovers dignity. Wow.
So, if you will, Ian, walk us through. So this is the woman, Heather Morgan, who actually has a career as a rapper, performance artist, and Forbes columnist, which is kind of, they all go together.
The whole Forbes situation, there was a lovely piece out this week where they basically just looked at the history of Forbes over the last 100 years. And yeah, there's a huge market in being a Forbes influencer because they've given up on all editorial standards.
Well, you pay to be part of the Forbes contributor network. There is legitimate, I think, journalism coming from Forbes. The problem is they're mixed together and you can't tell which is which. She, interestingly, published a story on Forbes called "Experts Share Tips to Protect Your Business from Cyber Criminals." Had we known of her expertise, we might have read that article. Anyway, Ian, tell me about the video.
Basically, this was it's one of these. It's sort of setting yourself up as an influencer or a rap band, you know, a rapper or whatever else. It was possibly the most cringeworthy thing I've seen all week. And that's against some heavy competition, it has to be said. But it's around online. She's basically just making bad music for money. But I mean, at the point you made in terms of the traceability of blockchain, yes, there are ways to launder, if you like, these funds by going through multiple mini transactions, feeding stuff through various different wallets and into a central core. But yeah, the arrest did show that this is not perfect. And
DOJ said they obtained private keys to the wallet using search warrants, allowing them to seize more than 94,000 of the 119,000 stolen bitcoins. The funny thing is, they're worth a lot more than they were when they were stolen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. there was 68 million when they were stolen. They're up to 4.5 billion now in total.
Yeah.
$600 per bitcoin at the time of the theft. Now it's valued at about $40,000.
Yeah.
And the really interesting part of this is going to be that the bitcoin exchange that was robbed claims that within 8 months after the theft, they'd settled all their debts to their customers.
Wow.
Everyone who they're claiming that when the people who were entrusted their Bitcoin to the exchange had their Bitcoin stolen, that the exchange had settled their debts with these people. And now they are in a blog post on their own servers. They're saying that they're looking to recover that Bitcoin from the government. And meanwhile, individual people who are customers saying, "Hey, look, I didn't agree to anything. I want my Bitcoin back, especially now that it's worth a double digit multiple of what it was when I put it inside that wallet." And the government so far has said that we're looking into how we're going to restore that Bitcoin to whoever it is who has a legal claim to it. There's speculation that they're simply going to auction it. Believe it or not, the government seizes Bitcoin just like they seize boats, paintings, anything, and just like they dispose of seized property, they do auction off digital currencies like that. So
that's bizarre. That shows you the difference
between
Bitcoin and dollars. You wouldn't auction off dollars; they have a value. Yeah. How can you get? You know, I'll pay $10,000 for that $5,000 pile of money. No, but Bitcoin is the value is so all over the place. Maybe it is worth more than today, tomorrow, or maybe not. And that's here. I found some of the video, Ian. You're in luck. From Jack Wagner.
Actually, no, I've seen it. I'm not in luck. It's really, really bad.
all right. Okay, it's only 30 seconds, kids. Jack's tweet is, "I don't know much about crypto security, but this person should not have been able to steal $4.5 billion of it. And I should hasten, as a good journalist, I'm sure Connie would tell me, to say allegedly steal $4.5
right.
billion. Dollars. Here we go.
Turkish Martha skirt. Keep gun up in her skirt. Been trapping with dessert.
Don't do that with your pelvis, please, lady.
I don't know what the sound effect is.
Oh, dear.
Like I say, painfully bad.
This is as... I would be better at rap than her. This is awful.
what I love about this is that I'm sure that in if you went to Blockbuster Video in 1997, you could also see like white women instructing you how to do hip hop dance and exactly those same moves. Oh dear.
Or white men, yes.
Yeah, or white men. Yeah, exactly. White men, yeah. Now you have to go to TikTok for that kind of thing.
I do love one of the comments in the IRC. Rebecca Black produced it.
Oh, yeah. There's a name from a blast from the past. All right, let's take a little break. This might be a somewhat shorter show because Connie really wants to see Scarlett Johansson and her husband flogging Amazon's Echo. It's a shame. They've ruined that commercial because they've leaked out bits and pieces of it. There's no surprise in that one, but the premise of it is, what if Amazon's Echo could read your mind? And then Colin, her husband, says things like, when is the date of that show? And the Echo says, set a reminder to fake my death on that date, and then more. So
that's just brilliant marketing, because I think that Amazon knows full well that there's one thing that people trust about the Amazon Echo. It's that it's not secretly collecting information.
Not reading your mind.
That you don't know about.
It's definitely not doing that. All right. Yet. A little break here. Maybe they're just pretending they don't know. That could be, too, yeah. Our show today brought to you by, I don't think Mint Mobile spent $6.5 million on a Super Bowl ad. This is just going to have to do for them. The money they save goes right in your pocket. Mint Mobile is amazing. It's the easiest way to save this year. They sell premium wireless service online only. They're the first company to do that. So no stores, no expensive ads means you maximize your savings. Get this. Just before I say an amount, I just want you to think in your mind, a little thought experiment. What is your monthly wireless bill right now? Is it $80? $90? I have one with a no-name company that's very expensive that's over $100 a month. Let's do this. Same quality, nationwide unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed data on the nation's largest 5G network. $15 a month. $15 a month. That gets you 4 gigabytes, which for most people is plenty. If you need more, you can get more. They have an unlimited plan. But honestly, $15 a month, that's all in. That's how much the other guys are wasting on Super Bowl ads by going online only, eliminating the traditional cost of retail, getting Ryan Reynolds and his 4-year-old daughters shoot their ads. Mint Mobile passes significant savings on to you. And as a Mint Mobile customer, I can verify they are great. I'll tell you, because you're geeks, you care. They are an MVNO for T-Mobile. So you're getting T-Mobile's network, which, by the way, right now is, I think, the best 5G network. It's amazing. You keep your phone if you want, and they'll send you the SIM. And unlike everybody else, they don't charge you for the SIM. You could port the number over very easily or buy a phone from Mint Mobile. I bought an iPhone SE for an amazing price, really amazing price. And when you combine the two together, I'm still only paying $30 a month. Brand new phone and great service. You choose the amount of data that's right for you. Don't pay for data you're not using. Starts at $15 a month for premium wireless service. You got to remember the name, Mint Mobile. Get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month. Go to mintmobile.com/twit. Sign up today. You get the plan shipped to your door for free. I love them so much, I have Mint Mobile socks. Mintmobile.com. Yes, they're minty green. Mintmobile.com/twit. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month. Mintmobile.com/twit. I will vouch for these guys. It's really great service at a great price. I think sometimes you hear that price, you go, that can't be. It is. It really is.
Plus, you get to have Deadpool as your ISP.
I know. Not bad, right? Good deal. I guess we should talk about the Samsung Galaxy S22 Ultra and the S Note S8, the new tablet Samsung announced on Wednesday. A little bit of a mess up at the Samsung website. You couldn't buy it. The pre-orders were open. You'd go through the whole thing. You'd tell them what you're trading in. I know, because I did it about 800 times. You do the whole thing, and you click the button, pre-order, and it spins and spins and says, nope, sorry. Finally fixed it by the end of the day, but I wonder how many sales they at least got deferred. This, Connie, I'm sure you'll be reviewing it. Not you personally, but CNET will be reviewing it soon. In fact, you probably already have a review unit. Did you get a chance to play with it at all?
I personally did not, but our team did.
Yeah.
And what's the takeaway? Cameras, design, references to people who know the Galaxy Note. I'll let Andy talk about it because I'm sure he has a more technical take on it. Starting price $1,200, and what they're going to ship it later this month, right?
February 25th. I will get it in 2 weeks. Oh. I'm excited. I think it's a beautiful design. These days, you're in an ecosystem. And, you know, for instance, my wife, who wears an Apple Watch, has an iPhone, has a Macintosh, I said, do you want to try the Flip 3? Because I'm trading it in for the Ultra. Do you want to try it before I do? And she said, can I use my Apple Watch with it? I said, no. She said, forget it. Andy, you have, it's funny, because you're on MacBreak Weekly. You were an iPhone user for years, but you've switched over to Android. Are you able to live this mixed marriage?
Yes, there are times where I think, as a Mac user, I'm thinking, and an iPad user, I'm thinking, gosh, it would be nice to have this on my phone. It'd be nice to have an Apple Watch on my phone, an Apple Watch that actually works with my phone. But yeah, no, it's possible. It's certainly possible, particularly if, as I did before I switched a number of years ago, I was making a concerted effort to not be so reliant on Apple services that aren't transferable to other things. I'd switched from Apple Notes, for instance, years earlier to something else because I was becoming aware and very annoyed of lock-in. But yeah, it's not ideal. One thing that there's so much that I admire and like about Apple products, one thing I don't like is that they really have to be absolutely forced to support any other platform or even make it palatable to use Apple services on other platforms. You would not see an Apple Music app on Android if not for the fact that they are in such a tight fight with Spotify and other services.
As Lisa Chico pointed out, your colleague at CNET, and you just mentioned kind of in passing, Connie, this is the Note replacement. And, you know, I was a Note fan from day one. I loved the big phone. Everybody's got big phones now. But essentially, even though Samsung hasn't officially said no more Note, it's pretty clear the Ultra, with its stylus and its styling and its size, is their new Note. And I think it's going to be a good. I think it's going to be a good option for people who like Notes.
It's a great looking phone, and certainly the camera looks really interesting. But coming back to your point, as we saw this week, we did a piece about this in Holland. Apple has been forced to allow third party payment systems on certain dating apps.
Oh my gosh!
And they have made it so incredibly difficult; it's not worth doing. And we're going to see the same thing all the way down the thing. They hate it when people leave their ecosystem, and they will do anything to stop it.
Yeah, in fact, developers have. I don't know if we covered this last week. I think we did. Developers have are incensed at Apple's insulting offer to the Dutch dating apps. We'll take 3% off our 30% commission, and that's because you're going to use somebody else for the credit card fees, which means you'll pay at least as much as you were paying to us. Plus, we're going to give you all sorts of hoops to jump through in order to get that app on the App Store, including a dedicated separate app for the separate payment plan. The Dutch regulators decided to continue their 5 million euro a week fine. It's my guess, they haven't responded yet, that they're not going to see this as responsive.
Well, I mean, I worked it out, okay? The maximum they can charge Apple is 50 million euros. And if you look at Apple's 2021 end-of-year results, that's 5 hours of profit.
Ugh.
That's it. And this is hardly what you call an incentive.
Ugh.
I was going to say, they're the first company to have a $3 trillion market cap. That happened in January. And they did that off of their closed ecosystem. So for people who like tech, you know, I'm not going to say that it's the be-all, end-all, but for people who like tech and want to go through some of the pain that is involved in using disparate services and getting different devices to work together, you can build whatever, you know, collection of tech you want. For people who just want the tech to work for them, Apple is a very appealing alternative, hence $3 trillion.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. I just always like to. One of the things that's annoying, the other things that's annoying about Apple is that, boy, they can be so frustrating when they're trying to respond to accusations, legal problems. They're willing to say they put together this image of themselves as this very, very benevolent company. It's always for the users. We're just doing making the best products, and we're trying to change the world. But if you say that, wow, that's great. Wouldn't it be great if you supported security software on app stores in countries where your users are kind of under the thumb of a very, very oppressive totalitarian surveillance state? They said, oh, well, gosh, what can we possibly do? We have to comply with whatever laws are local in the country which we're operating the app store. But then when you ask them to do something that they don't want to do, which is to simply, look, here's a local law, local ruling that says that you need to allow your developers to do this, they say, well, great, we'll write that $50 million check and continue to do exactly what we want to do.
Do you think that's what they'll do? They'll just thumb their nose at Dutch regulators and say, here, take your 50 million euros. Who cares?
That's so arrogant. I do think that that's what they're going to do.
It also is a problem because the reason they claim that they bow down to the Chinese government all the time is, well, you have to follow local laws.
Yes. I mean, this is what irritates me when you see Apple advertising themselves as a privacy-first company. They should have a big asterisk there with offer does not apply in China. You know, I mean,
but why do they kowtow to the Chinese but not the Dutch?
Well, because China is a much bigger market.
Oh, yeah, the market size.
The market for the Netherlands to Apple is minuscule, whereas it's absolutely key that they keep the Chinese market under control.
I'm not going to rain on people's parade, but let's remember, these are all for-profit companies.
Yeah.
I was trying to think, Andy, when you were talking, and I'm not an Apple apologist by any stretch of the imagination, but what is a benevolent tech company? Like, who's a benevolent? They're all for-profit, right? And they do whatever is expedient. Facebook, is that benevolent? Twitter, is that benevolent? Google, benevolent? Microsoft, sat through the Microsoft antitrust trial back in the, you know, early days. So, I mean, yes, we can all kvetch. They have a PR image that Apple, you know, is privacy first and with a lots of asterisks, not just one for China. There are many asterisks there. Yes. But I would love to know what is a benevolent tech company that makes an ecosystem I can buy into. Yeah.
I agree 100%. But the source of my annoyance is that other companies like Google, like Facebook, they don't try to identify themselves that way. Whereas Apple, they got the CNC machine making this beautiful golden halo with a perfectly beveled and chamfered front edges and no headphone jack, and they strut when they put that on. They strut in front of everybody else, saying, "Yes, oh gosh, if only everybody else cared so much, we cry nightly about the problems of privacy, unlike others that seem not to even care." It's like, yeah, but again, that, so Connie, that's I agree with you completely. It's like every
I was going to say,
our company should be
hashtag courage. Andy.
Courage. Well, that's another irony because Samsung has done ads talking about Apple dropping the headphone jack and mocking Apple's notch just ends up doing the same thing eventually anyway. So there's enough courage to go around.
I mean, that is particularly on the headphone jack, that is intensely annoying. I mean, I've just upgraded my phone and got one of the last Pixels with a headphone jack on. Yeah. But my wife, who's an Apple user, is now living the dongle life, and it sucks.
I hate it badly. Yeah. I hate it.
Even Samsung's ginormous, what is it?
They have the room
tablet.
Yeah,
they have a 14-inch tablet they announced this week, and it doesn't have a headphone jack. And that is just, what is your excuse? What is your explanation? Oftentimes the explanation is that, well, there's so little room inside a phone that we don't have room for it, or gosh, it interferes with dust and water intrusion. Okay, fine, maybe, but on a tablet with that and the iPad Pro, it's like you have room. People like
nobody's
it.
Going. Swimming with a 14-inch tablet.
it's a 14-inch.
It's to sell. It's just, let's face it. It's obvious. It's to sell Bluetooth earbuds, which both companies make, and both companies make a lot of money on. And it's shameful, I think, but because Bluetooth will never be as good as wired. I'm sorry, it just won't.
Well, I mean, the amount of software that people stick in their own Bluetooth stacks makes it incredibly difficult to, even now. I mean, we're managing to do remote management on the James Webb Space Telescope over 1 million miles away, but we can't get our Bluetooth headphones to connect because someone's put some software in the stack. It's incredibly frustrating.
Yes, but try to get your iPods Max to your AirPods Max to connect to the Space Telescope. You will have exactly the same problem.
So you know, half the time I'm on a phone call, all of a sudden the AirPods go to the telescope. It's crazy. It's crazy. Actually, peripherally, this is a complete rat hole, but I do want to say, wow, James Webb is out there. It is, yes, almost a million kilometers away. We are talking to it. In fact, it just sent back how many gigabytes of data? They're currently tuning it because they have 18 segments on the mirror that they have to adjust to make sure it gets one image. So this is the what they call the initial alignment mosaic. Each of the segments took a picture of one star, and now, of course, they're going to have to slowly align those segments so that those 18 dots turn into a single dot. Let me see if I can find from this NASA story how many gigabytes of data that was. It was a huge amount of data, 54 gigabytes of raw data that they sent a million kilometers away. You know, I guess they're using Mint Mobile because there's no way you're doing that on Verizon.
Well, I was lucky enough to see it being built at Goddard.
Really?
I was out at a astronomers conference out there. It's just the most amazing instrument ever. It's also the ultimate piece of space origami. The way they managed to fit that into a single Ariane capsule, and then the engineer, because NASA is so still aches at the memory of the Hubble's mistake, so they had to get this absolutely right. So they built it, then they put it through a vibration chamber to simulate launch, then they put it through a near vacuum vibration chamber, then they spent 2 months chilling it down using liquid nitrogen to make sure you could still unfold it. It's a marvelous instrument and a triumph of engineering. I'm just hoping it works properly.
I think we're getting that was the problem, is you can test it all you want, a nitrogen box, but you don't know what is going to happen when you get into space. And if you're a million kilometers away, there's no repair mission, as there was with Hubble, to go out and fix it. But I have to say, it got there. It unfolded. We're getting images back. They are now calibrating, and it seems to be going very well. We live in this really interesting era of contradictions, where there are people sleeping on the street in San Francisco, and then we have this amazing technology. It's just, I guess, has life always been this way? And I just noticing now, or it seems like the gap between the most amazing thing humans can do and the worst things humans can do is widening.
Well, we're seeing it play out every day. NASA is an amazing organization. I'm a huge admirer, and I'm very envious that you got to go see that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Being built.
Me too.
But, you know, people are questioning science, right? We've been living through a pandemic where science and facts are now something that you can debate and say it's my personal choice whether to believe in science or not. So that's always been the case. I just think the stakes are higher. And to your point about wealth distribution, you know, all the crypto scammers are taking all the money, right? So it is a very we're living through an unusual period.
They're all moving to disused oil platforms and seasteading their new country where there's no regulations, no rules. All right, back. That was a little detour,
but a good one.
I think
an exciting one.
You know, it's so easy. We sometimes talk about the negatives of technology so much. I know this was a debate that they recently had at Wired, and there was a great editorial where the editor-in-chief, and I'm sure, Connie, you watched it with interest, said, you know, we've gotten kind of negative, and we weren't started that way. Wired was originally 20 years ago a techno-optimist publication. We don't want to go in that fully in either direction. And I feel the same way. I'm a tech optimist. I'm doing this job for pretty much my entire lifetime because I love technology and I'm excited about the potential and I want people to be able to use it for good. But it's very easy to look at it and go, oh my God, Meta, you know, we're in deep trouble. So,
well, it's important to remember I'm a tech optimist as well. And I wrote for the first issues of Wired. I was a contributing editor
when
they launched.
I didn't know that. I guess I did know that now that I think of it. That's right.
And they were I mean, I think we're all tech optimists. Otherwise, we wouldn't be tech reporters. But it's just important to remember that tech is a means to an end. It's not the end. It's people who are driving how that tech is deployed and used. And so you have a problem with profit before humanity, you know, social media, you know, lots of debates about what's happening there. But, you know, tech in and of itself is a wonderful thing if it's deployed correctly, but it's up to people to set the policy and deploy that. So that's what we should be talking about is, you know, who's doing this stuff? Why are they doing it? Andy's point earlier about cryptocurrencies, the number of people who don't have access to banking in this country or in the world, for that matter, it can help solve that problem. But somebody's going to need to want to solve it in a meaningful way and maybe not put profit at the top of the list of priorities in what they're doing. And that's where it can get a little discouraging.
Well, we may be at the precipice, if you really want to get grim about this, and have to solve these problems. Like, if we don't solve these problems, we're going to be in trouble. My wife is reading John Doerr's new book. She loves it, Speed and Scale. And it's an action plan for solving climate crisis. And he makes a very good point. There's not a lot of time left. And we seem to lack the political will to do what we have to do. And if we wait until it's all tumbling around our ears, it may be too late. But
I mean, this America's in kind of a bubble about this. I mean, if you looked at, Angela Merkel has just resigned in Germany, and they had an election to replace her. And the candidate spent 20 minutes per debate talking about climate change, whereas in America, they hardly discussed it at all during the last presidential debates, and at least one of the candidates didn't think it was real anyway.
Yeah.
America is very strange on this front, and as a European who's over here, it's kind of disturbing, because you're right, we are running out of time rapidly, and this needs to get sorted.
But it's also a global problem, so if America's not on board, if China's not on board, if India and Africa are not on board, it's not going to matter that Germany cares. We have to, and that's another thing. We're not very good at global action.
Well, a lot.
Sorry.
No, just quickly. I mean, not to be a downer, but a lot of this problem is a simple problem of lobbying. One of the reasons why the James Webb Telescope is where it is right now is because there was no money trying to prevent it from happening. There was no profit in trying to stop it from happening. There was no political gain in stopping it from happening in a direct sense. And that's the sort of thing that can happen, where people can have an argument, and at some point someone will say, you know what, you're NASA, you know more about this than we do, we're giving you appropriations to spend largely as you see fit, go ahead and do it. Whereas once global warming is starting to be seen as a threat against the energy businesses, and now they have money in order to convince or coerce lawmakers in the United States to make sure you vote against it. Once you also start to make that into a political wedge, into saying that, oh well, you know what, those awful people who claim based on theoretical no evidence that the planet is doomed is trying to close down these mines. They're trying to close down. Realize how many people get killed because of wind power, get killed because of solar, but don't worry, we're fighting for your behalf to try to make these insane hippies. This is unfortunately the best thing for any technology is to be ignored, is to get in under the radar, which is weird because the technology is supposed to be at the service of society, which means that society needs to know about it, needs to be part of that conversation. It's a horrible contradiction.
It's sad though that all this people are using to their political advantage, using these talking points, when it's purely for their own political advantage. It's not looking out for the long-term future of the planet. That's terrifying to me. And that's a problem we really have to solve. But back to the Galaxy S8.
Back to the gadget phone. Yes.
Actually, I'm interested in, Connie, you have a couple of reviews of the Galaxy Tab. This is a giant tablet going straight against Apple's iPad Pro. And in fact, Joshua Goldman, writing for CNET, said it should have been a Chromebook with Dex built in. It comes with the keyboard. It is, yes, high priced, but considering that you get the stylus and the keyboard as part of the price right now anyway, maybe not so outrageously priced. Is it finally time for Android tablets to unseat the iPad?
Well, I mean, I don't know if at that price point, right? That's the reason that iPads,
it's
you know,
a laptop.
Everyone doesn't.
Yeah.
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 But it's the convergence of these devices, right? And if nothing else, the pandemic has gotten people, you know, using more technology than ever before. And for a lot of people, that was their mobile phone. And the screen is small on a mobile phone, unless you have a large format phone. And then you have your laptop, right? Remember, people thought, you know, desktops were dead. And the past 2 years has been the resurgence of desktops because we've all been locked in our son's bedrooms, right?
Yep.
Using technology.
Is this your son's bedroom?
This is my son's
bedroom.
Oh,
I thought you were really into The Mandalorian. I'm sorry. Never mind.
Well, that's a Star Wars helmet, but someone on my staff has offered and is 3D printing a Mandalorian helmet.
Oh,
so
wow.
Maybe the next time I come on, I'll have a Mandalorian helmet.
That would
helmet.
Be nice.
But,
wow.
But yeah, it's about the convergence of devices. And I mean, we've been talking about this for a long time, phablets, or, you know, at what point does a tablet replace your laptop? And it's really just a matter of price, right? At some point, to get to a mass market, the capability and the technology is there. iPad has done a really good job. Apple has done a really good job. The Android tablets, for better or worse, have been considered, you know, inexpensive, limited function devices. And so now you're seeing people challenge that because people are actually wanting to spend the money. If you're going to go out and carry your laptop around, you know, even that, even your lightest laptop is still heavy compared to a tablet.
I don't know how many they made, but they've sold so, the Ultra, the big one, the 14.6 one, they've sold so many in the U.S., they've actually stopped pre-orders. I had to go to Best Buy to see if I could get one from them. It is a huge Super AMOLED screen, 2960 by 1848, 240 dots per inch, 120 hertz refresh rate. And, of course, Samsung's known for the displays. There couldn't be anybody better to do this. And Josh says, got Zoom meetings. This will be your new best friend. And I guess, I mean, based on sales, this is a pent-up demand. This is something a lot of people want. It's bigger than some laptops at 14.6 inches.
And certainly as expensive. $1,200 for the thing itself. Once you add in the good keyboard that you would probably need to have in order to justify
They're selling device. It now, right now, included with a keyboard and stylus, which may be why it's sold out so fast.
Probably.
Yeah.
But it's it really is kind of shocking how bad. Everybody's right that, and Google has not really made any sort of a priority up to this point in trying to make make Android tablets into as productive and useful a device as iPad tablets are. They're really, really good if you want to sell a $60-$70 Fire tablet, which is extremely useful. It's a good, valuable thing. I wonder what put the bug up their nose recently to decide that. Now that the iPad has been out for almost 10 years, maybe we should look into this. And now that they're coming out with Android 12L, which is not simply, whereas before, when Google would announce, here's the new version of Android, they would sort of throw in that, we've added some support for larger screens and different screen sizes. This is the one in which they're saying, no, here's an actual distinct version of Android that's intended for large screens and also multi-screens, like folding screens, stuff like that. Given that Samsung is essentially the hardware arm of Android. Yes, Google makes their own phones, but in the United States of America, there is no market for Android phones. There's a market for Samsung phones worldwide, even although Android is the largest operating system for mobiles anywhere. If you took it worldwide market share, Samsung has the market share of all. I'm trying to remember from last week when I looked this up. If you look at the pie chart, they have the market share of the next three plus like the remainder after the fourth.
Yeah.
And so basically you wonder what kind of meetings that Samsung has been had saying, look, we are a premier display maker. We could sell so many more displays if you guys allowed us to make really, really good Android-based tablets. What are you going to do to help us to make tablets that are going to justify that kind of price level? So maybe we'll see some change in the next year and a half. But boy, do they sat on their hands for so many years that it's hard to imagine someone who coming into a store with $1,000 who doesn't decide to buy a laptop with that money to decide to overlook an iPad and simply go with Android.
Yeah. Because historically, Android tablets have fallen because of its software. And so, interestingly, Samsung's doing a lot of their own software.
But, I mean, it is weird how Google dropped the ball on this one, because the Nexus tablets, when they came out, were pretty good tablets. The Nexus phones were fantastic. You know, the latest Pixel things are massively overpriced for what they are, but they're still pretty good handsets. But I don't understand why Google dropped the ball on this and just handed the market to Samsung.
Google dropped the ball on dot, dot, dot. I mean, that is that is the story of Google, and inexplicably the story of Google these days. And I, you know, we've talked a lot about it on This Week in Google. We can't figure it out. Mike Elgin's contention is just Sundar Pichai is a terrible CEO and hasn't wrangled all these individual, you know, autonomous teams into a whole. And they're competing with each other, much like Microsoft used to do. And they just, they can't stick with anything. They're ADD in the extreme. It's very disappointing, frankly.
Well, sometimes it comes down to what is the nature, what is the story that the company is telling about itself. Google has always been an amazing services company. Apple has not done anything really, really great with services. But Apple's a hardware company, and they can focus and they can prioritize and they can target and manufacture amazingly. And Google, they're not fundamentally a hardware company, and they're still trying to figure that out. They only just got into the game a few years ago, 5 years ago, when they hired Rick Osterloh from Motorola to essentially be their hardware czar, and famously and perhaps most embarrassingly for Google Hardware, there was that meeting of Google Hardware a month before the release of the Pixel 4 a couple of years ago, in which the head of hardware basically got the team together about this phone they were about to announce and say, "Wow, this is a terrible phone. I'm really disappointed in all of you," which is like, what are you people doing?
It's a little late to mention that, Rick. I like Rick a lot. He does not have a success. His track record is, I'm sorry, since he left Motorola, since he went to Google, has been terrible. And that's part of the problem, certainly. But ultimately, it falls in Sundar Pichai's court. He's got to get this company under
control. It's stopped innovating and gone into rent-seeking. I mean, this is what I find very frustrating about Google.
But that's what's kept them alive, right? Is search. Search advertising is...
Search
is,
and YouTube.
And YouTube.
Yeah.
And they have so much cash flow from that they can fail at everything else, and they have.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're doing well with cloud. They're still losing money, but they're still putting money into it,
and
they're still getting more
business
than they can.
It's a distant third after Microsoft and Amazon.
But it's a really good place to be in growth. When you're charging people just for access of your servers, when you're basically making money every time another services-based company is established and becomes profitable, that is a really good place to be. They're at least in much better position than Facebook/Meta is, where Meta has got nothing going on apart from the advertising business, and it's a very limited advertising business that they're in.
Yeah.
So. It's an interesting time for Google, but I think there's room for optimism for Google, because they do seem to be realizing that they can still make a lot of there's still a lot of parts of the world in which they're not making nearly as much money as they possibly could with their most popular products. So it's interesting, but I would love to see them crack hardware, because the Pixel phones I've never owned. My first Android phone was a Samsung. All subsequent phones were Nexus devices or Pixel devices, because I really do think they've got a lot of great ideas for hardware. They can definitely take advantage of Apple's point of view of, if we make the hardware and the operating system and the developer package, then we can do some exciting things that other companies can't do. So I hope that they get their act together on all bases, because they are capable of doing great stuff.
I'm absolutely rooting for them. I'm just disappointed.
And we should just mention that other people have noticed that, you know, Apple has owned the tablet space, and Microsoft, to their credit, has done some good stuff with the Surface.
Oh, excellent point. Yep. In fact, you could also say this Note 8 Ultra is kind of aimed at the Surface. Same idea. In fact, the reason they're using DeX on it is because it is sort of... a computer. Kind of.
No, I mean, I used the Surface for many years, and I did love it in its way, apart from the kickstand at the back, which, if you spend a fair amount of time commuting, try using that on your lap in a busy train.
Not allowable. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, it was a great laptop. It could be an opportunity for Google to do this properly.
They've abandoned the Chromebook.
Yeah.
They made the best Chromebooks. They were pricey, but they made the Pixelbook. They're out of support, and they don't have a replacement. I don't get it.
Well, my Pixel Chromebook still works now that I've stuck a new operating system on it, but they were building in obsolescence to this. Yeah. I mean, it literally died on you after a few years.
It's frustrating.
And that's incredibly frustrating for a laptop user.
Yeah, I'm going to rain on the parade again as a business reporter. Margins on hardware, right, are pretty tight, right? Ask Michael Dell, what's the margin on a PC? 2% less. And Apple has something like 30% on the Macs, unheard of.
Their margin is amazing, isn't it?
Well, because they own that and they've streamlined the production. Tim Cook came from operations.
He's brilliant.
But my point is Google makes services. The margins on services businesses are 60%+, right? So if you're going to look at where you're going to invest your money to get the most bang for the buck, it's not going to be in hardware unless there's a reason you want to do it, to put a stake in the ground. And I think the Chromebooks were right, a stake in the ground to go after the education market with low margin and, you know, seed that younger generation and make them all Android friendly, Android aware. And I guess they decided in the end they didn't need to do that anymore.
Yeah. Apple's profit margin December 31st was 28% entire. Because maybe services brought that up. And let's not forget, Google writes approximately $1 billion a month check to Apple, which goes in their services category for Apple continuing to use Google on the iPhone. So that's a pretty big chunk of the total services revenue just comes from another services company. Let's take a little break. Come back with more. Connie Guglielmo is here. She is, of course, EIC at CNET at Tech Leads on the Twitter. Andy Inako, who is chief tech correspondent at WGBH Public Radio in Boston, one of my favorite all-time favorite stations. That's where I heard Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy for the first time, is on WGBH in Boston. And from the Register, the snark capital of the Western world, probably the Eastern too, I don't know what they have in China, Ian Thompson, where he is.
Pleasure, as always.
Your news editor, is that still your title? I can never remember.
U.S. editor at the moment.
Nice.
Honestly, I miss being a reporter, you know. It's kind of like, but it's journalism. They kick you upstairs if you get too good at it. So.
Well, it's the Peter Principle, right? You rise to the your level.
I'm not quite sure the Peter Principle works in this case. Thanks, okay. Mate. But no.
I'm sorry. That was a mean thing to say. I was just teasing you. You know, you're the best.
I know.
Honestly, our show today brought to you by BetterHelp. I know a lot of us have been suffering mental anguish of one kind or another during the pandemic. It's human nature. There's a lot of things to deal with, but the good news is help is out there, and BetterHelp is making it easier and more affordable than ever before. BetterHelp, it's not a crisis line, it's not self-help, is professional counseling from licensed professional therapists done securely online. And it is amazing, and I can say that from personal experience. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can connect in a safe and private online environment. You can connect the way you want. You can do weekly video if you want. You can do phone sessions if you don't want the camera on. A lot of people like that. You can message your counselor anytime, and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. So you're really getting help throughout the week. It's convenient. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. I mentioned that because it's not a crisis line. So there are crisis lines. If you're in crisis right now, please take advantage of that. But if you want long-term guidance, counseling, coaching, this is a great way to do it without ever sitting in an uncomfortable waiting room in private with great therapists. And by the way, one of the things I've always been a big believer in is you've got to find the right therapist for you. Everybody's different. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors anytime if you need it. And that's, I think, an extremely important point. Don't hesitate, in fact, to try a few different counselors so you find somebody who really fits your needs. It is more affordable than traditional offline counseling. They do have financial aid, so don't let money get in your way of getting the help you need. This is a global service. You could find a variety of expertise. And because it's global, you don't have to limit yourself to whoever's near you so you can go see them. You can find an expert in any area, pulling from a large pool of licensed professional counselors. Depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, anger, family conflicts. Who doesn't have those these days? LGBTQ matters, grief, self-esteem. All of these things can be absolutely changed. Everything you share is confidential, it's convenient, it's professional, and again, it's very affordable. Check out the testimonials. They post new ones on their site every day. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp. They're recruiting additional counselors all over the country right now. This is the time, right? But don't suffer in silence. Don't suffer alone. I want you to start living a happier life today. 10% off your first month. Visit our sponsor, BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, BetterHelp.com/twit. A million people now have taken charge of their mental health using BetterHelp. You can too. BetterHelp, HELP.com/twit. This is really an idea whose time has come. It's a really great service. BetterHelp.com/twit. Thank you for your support. Talking about Meta, talking about Facebook, they're threatening to shut down Facebook and Instagram in Europe if those darn regulators just don't let up. You got to stop knocking us, man. The problem is this privacy shield. The agreement that was initiated between U.S. social media networks and other companies storing data in the U.S. and European regulators, the privacy shield was designed to make it so that if they are going to store European data in American servers, they adhere to all the privacy laws of the EU. The EU has decided, apparently, that the privacy shield is not working, and they're about ready to go to companies like Meta and say, look, you got to start storing your stuff in European servers because you're not adhering to our regulations. And Meta now has, in a filing with the SEC, warned if a new framework is not adopted, if the company can no longer use the privacy shield agreements, they will not be able, probably, this is in a quotes, probably not be able to offer, quote, its most significant products and services. That would, I presume, include Facebook and Instagram in the EU. Connie, is this a bluff?
I'm laughing because, yeah, it's a bluff. But, you know, they can say whatever they want in their company filings. Oh, it's hurting us and we might have to pull it. And then the rest of the story is that after they said that and put that statement out in their filing, I believe it was a regulator in Germany, but it might have been in France, who said, yeah, that's good. You know, we don't need
it. It was both.
Facebook.
It was France and Germany.
France and Germany said, yeah, whatever. We don't need it. But my life is better without you guys. Go away. So executives from Facebook then put out a statement on the company's blog saying, no, it's not our intention to walk away from Europe. But, you know, we're really concerned about this. It's going to have a material impact on our business, which, you know, Facebook makes a lot of money. They're not a nonprofit. And so it's going to cost you more to do business in these countries. And that's the ultimate call. I will say, Facebook's growth is not in Europe. It's not in the U.S. either, right? Like, I was looking up some stats. 90% of Facebook's daily active users come from outside the U.S. and Canada, and their biggest growth opportunities are in India, Indonesia, yeah. Brazil, right? So other markets. So it's not that they don't need Europe, but that's not where the growth is. But at the same time, this is a cost of doing business, and it's a cost of doing business calculation.
It's a little weird that they wouldn't just say, okay, fine, we'll put our data on servers in the EU.
What are they afraid of? Why wouldn't they do that? Is it that they can't live with the privacy requirements?
I mean, there's a cost aspect, but also Europe has, as you put and pointed out, very strong privacy requirements. And
so they're really saying we don't want to protect your privacy. That's too much. A bridge too far.
Well, I mean, kind of the EU has been painted into a corner on this one because they didn't really want to pick a fight with Facebook in the first place. But there's a lovely Austrian bloke called Max Schrems who took the whole thing to court and pointed out that, yeah, okay, you can't do business like that under existing EU laws. So that's kicked the whole thing off.
By the way, his name now lives in infamy, right? Because they call it the Max Schrems rule.
But, I mean, Connie has it exactly right. Facebook threw that down on the table, and the French and German government said, yeah, okay, fair enough, withdraw services. We can live with that. And call the bluff, and now Facebook is backpedaling faster than an Olympic rower.
I'll give you the quotes. It was a meeting of economic ministers from Germany and France. Germany economy minister Robert Habeck told reporters, after being hacked, I've lived without Facebook and Twitter for 4 years and life has been fantastic. And then to which the French finance minister Bruno Le Maire said, I can confirm life without Facebook is very good. I'm sorry, I made him into Pepe Le Pew. I didn't mean to do that.
It would have been nice if the French spokesperson had just gone, poof.
Digital giants must understand the European continent will resist and affirm its sovereignty. I fought in your general direction. No, he didn't say that part. I added that. Anyway.
It would be nice having Fetcher Lavache, but still.
I think, honestly, that it's a little bluffing on both sides. Do you think they'll work something out, Connie?
Yes. I do think they'll work something out, but it's going to be gradations, right? They'll have some sort of something for a limited period of time, and they'll revisit it. But I think Ian's point is correct. The European Union has been extremely forward-thinking and very aggressive in privacy protections. Facebook does not want those protections, you know, to have to adhere to them. It would not allow them to exploit user data the way they have been, because they make a lot of their money from ads. 90%+ of Facebook's money comes from ads. Not all ads are created equal. Targeted ads that know something about you and that are being fed to you based on preferences, are the most valuable in the hierarchy of ads. So, you know, they go to Capitol Hill, by the way, along with the other tech companies, and say, well, we're willing to accept some regulation because privacy is important. But I haven't ever seen any proposals for what kind of regulation they are actually willing to accept. So this is a dance. So they have started, their dance, and it's going to work its way through.
I think there's also a lot of testing, fingers to the wind, because obviously EU politicians don't want to do anything that their constituency will hate. So and I'm sure Facebook's saying, well, watch this. When we pull, I don't know if Facebook's the big deal. I think maybe WhatsApp is a bigger deal in some of these countries. But if we pull our products out of your country, you're gonna be thrown out of office. And I think the politicians are also saying, well, is that the case? How dependent are people on this? And I think increasingly consumers are aware of the privacy issues and maybe are less than happy about how much data Facebook collects. So I think everybody's kind of jockeying a little bit to see, well, how is this going to affect us in the long run?
Yeah, it's a little like prohibition. You can get enough ground support to say, yes, we should definitely do this. We're with you. We're on your side, government regulators. But then once you take away this from everybody, that's when you start dealing with the problem of, is this really a populist support action, or is this something that you probably should have negotiated out better? It really is this plus things like the rulings that Google has been suffering recently, that Google Analytics is now violates GDPR, use of Google fonts violates GDPR.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Well, This is the test of GDPR. Is it good? Is it necessary? Is it right? And is it flexible? If it is all of those four things, then all of these international companies, mostly the huge titans that are based in the United States, they've been used, and I'm including Apple here, they've all been used to the idea of we can do whatever we want, and our products are so popular and beloved worldwide that your government, your people are just going to have to deal with it. They're not this old-fashioned way of Apple and Google and Facebook having essentially one international policy and making little trims and adjustments for local legislations is not going to work anymore. You're going to have essentially a Facebook for each individual geopolitical unit, because each one is going to want to have their own regulations, their own protections for privacy. And they can fight it, but that's going to buy them some time until they're forced to acknowledge that we can't just simply pull out of every country that doesn't allow us to do exactly what we want to do and how we want to do it. And that's what I think we're going to do. I think we're also going to see a lot more pressure on the Department of Commerce of American tech companies to, look, fix the privacy shield, find a way to negotiate internationally so that whatever it is that was made this okay for most people in 2016 but failed in 2020 can be renewed and renabled for 2022, because it is much easier for American industry to be able to simply comply with one set of regulations imposed by a diplomatically agreed federal standard than to simply come up with a brand new product for every sphere in which they want to operate. They don't want to do that.
Yeah. And then there's the UK.
Oh, great. Yeah. Jump on the Brit.
I remember when this was first floated back in 2017, that if you wanted to watch porno in the UK, that you'd have to go to a pub and verify your age so that could be put on record so you'd be allowed to do it.
Yes. Okay. So, first off, I would like to say this isn't about just pornography. I know the Reg gets a reputation for being somewhat smutty, but Gaz actually really nailed this. This is about age verification for a whole bunch of services, including social media. And as is the style with the British government these days and these Brexit Island moments, they're not going to do it themselves. They're going to hand it off to a third-party supplier. So all the age verification and credit card details are going to the lowest bidder, who is going to run the service for the government.
Oh, what a nightmare! Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, you're not only creating a large database of really valuable information, you're linking it to pornography, which means that the kind of criminals who will go after people on blackmail grounds will also say, oh, this has shown up, that you are accessing this stuff.
Right.
So that's another attack vector being used. It is a disaster in the making. Unfortunately, disasters in the making are what Britain has become quite known for some time.
Number
now.
One export, it seems, besides Stilton cheese. Yeah.
Tunnock's tea cakes, of course. Marmite.
Marmite, well, you say. Just the specter of an 18-year-old walking into a bar to verify his age is just a little disconcerting. Do you think this is going to happen?
They've been talking about it for many years now. I mean, I think this plan was first mooted about 3 years ago, and it got shot down fairly quickly because you had people in, you know...
Oh, we mocked it. I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. However, this is Britain we're talking about at the moment, and the ability for my country to cut its own throat has been tested and found wanting many, many times over the last few years. So I think it may well go through, and they'll put it down as, oh, this is an anti-pornography measure, but it's a disaster waiting to happen, and it's going to happen, it seems. I mean, the current government is... Well, okay, if you've been following British politics, the current government is in a bit of a pickle, to say the least. And I think they're going to let this one go through, because enough Conservative MPs seem to think it's a good idea, because they don't really understand the technology on it.
A disaster in the making that almost happened in the U.S. The IRS was going to use a third party, ID.me, to collect face recognition information to verify yourself on the IRS sites after a lot of criticism and saber rattling from people like us included, the IRS has backed down. But what is unknown is they already, ID.me already collected 7 million facial records from people who signed up through the IRS, and it's unknown what's going to happen. Ron Wyden, who wrote the letter that finally convinced the IRS, maybe Senator Wyden, of course, pretty savvy about technology, forced the IRS to say, okay, maybe we shouldn't be collecting face recognition information just to prevent fraud. I'd be very curious. The chair now of the House Oversight Committee wants to know whether the agency will tell ID.me to erase what you have already. We don't know yet. So
yeah,
there's good news. They're going to drop that face recognition requirement. Although 30 other states and 10 federal agencies still use it, unknown what will happen to the existing data.
But I mean, it comes back to what you were saying before, in that a lot of people don't have the technology to make this work. You know, there is a large number of people in the US, for example, who don't have a decent laptop, who don't have a phone that could work with this. And just giving all that data to a third party, particularly for something like tax, was just insane. It's the same problem that we have with the UK and their age verification problems. They are two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. Take a little break. Come back with more with our esteemed panel. Great bunch. We're trying to, I don't want to say rush through the tech news, but Connie wants to see the commercials on the Super Bowl, and I kind of do too.
Sure, use me as your
excuse.
Yeah,
I want to see Mary J. Blige in the halftime show. So that's
we all do, because collectively we have a responsibility. A lot of people work very, very hard in these
exactly.
commercials, and it would just take the Mickey right out of them if none of us watched them. I think.
Dwayne Johnson is now on the field. I don't understand why The Rock gets so much attention, but. Apparently, he's beginning the football game with some sort of huge scream.
So that is a good tactical choice, because he can clear the field just with his charisma.
Yeah, that's it. Charisma clearing.
I get very lucky because our local pub doesn't show it. They don't have a TV in. So
isn't that nice? It's very quiet in there.
Well, yes, but there's honestly, a pub shouldn't have a TV in it, because it automatically draws the eye.
Yeah, nobody talks. Yeah, I agree 100%. Somebody was selling for years a remote control that you could carry into a bar and turn off all the TVs.
Well, do you remember someone using that at CES? A couple of people got thrown out because they'd gone around the displays and just like,
the trick is keep it in your pocket, guys. I guess that's, in a way, kind of my motto for life. Our show today brought to you by Worldwide Technology and Intel. WWT. We love these guys. Went out. That was our last visit right before pandemic began. Lisa and I flew out to St. Louis to visit WWT's world headquarters and their amazing advanced technology center. This is an incredible thing. You know, those of us have been in the tech business for a while, remember, you know, the big PC magazine and the labs that they had, and all of these, you know, independent labs are kind of gone by the wayside. Thank goodness WWT has now invested, they have $500 million worth of OEM technologies in their ATC, a huge amount of equipment. It's spread from one building to two to three to four. I think there's five or six now. And what's great about these labs, of course, the engineers at WWT use it to spin up proofs of concept, to integrate hardware and software to help their customers who are bringing technology into their enterprises. But what's great about this is you can use it too. The Advanced Technology Center offers hundreds of on-demand, schedulable labs that you can use yourself to try out these technologies before you buy, featuring solutions that include technologies like Intel's Xeon Scalable Processors and Intel's Optane Persistent Memory and Optane SSDs. There are labs representing all the newest advances in everything like multi-cloud architecture, security, networking, primary and secondary storage, data analytics, and AI DevOps. Everything you need to know when you're incorporating technology into your business. Now, the engineers have used this for years, but now partners can use the ATC, spin up their own proofs of concepts, their own pilots, select the best solutions. And it's more than just these labs. There's technical articles, white papers, expert insights, demonstration videos. There's hands-on labs. There's all sorts of tools to keep you up to date with the latest technology. With the Advanced Technology Center from WWTN Intel, you can test out products and solutions before you go to market. It's not only a physical lab space, it's a virtual space that you can use any time of the day or night, anywhere in the world. And guess what? It's free to, yes, it's free to become a member of the ATC platform. And while you're there, you want to also check out the events and communities. They do some great stuff. They bring in lots of smart. We've done a panel there. It was really fantastic. A place you can learn about technology trends, hear the latest research and insights. Whatever your business need, whatever business you're in, WWT can deliver scalable, tried and tested, tailored solutions. Solutions for you specifically, because they understand business. They know that whatever technology you use has to support your business strategy. That's what WWT does. They bring strategy and execution together to make this amazing new world happen. To learn more about WWT, the ATC, to gain access to all these free resources, is very simple. Go to WWT.com/twit. Make sure you go to the slash twit part so they know you saw it here. That helps us a lot. WWT.com/twit. Create an account on their ATC platform and get learning. WWT.com/twit. Love these guys. And boy, if you're in business and you're using technology, you will love them as well. Word of warning from Bleeping Computer. This was inevitable. Microsoft has turned on, and I've heard a lot of annoyance about it, the ad for Windows 11. If you're still running Windows 10, you're going to get a pop-up saying, hey, you could get Windows 11. Sometimes even if you can't, by the way. But now there are bad guys out there. We call them threat actors. And I'm not talking Sylvester Stallone here. These are bad guys who've started distributing pop-ups that look like the Microsoft pop-up saying, hey, it's here. You can install it, Windows 11, except when you click the link, it doesn't take you to a Microsoft site. It takes you to a site that looks just like Microsoft. It used to be windows-upgraded.com. The good guys have shut that down, but there will be other sites. Can you tell the difference if you're a normal user from this and a Microsoft site? No. But if you click that button that says download now, you're not going to get Windows 11. You're going to get something called the Red Line Stealer, which, as you might have guessed, that's a malware. Yeah. actually, I thought it was going to be the name for the new name for the Washington football team, but no, it's not. It's which would have been a good name, right? The Red Line Stealers. But no.
If Canada can have two football teams named Rough Riders, we can have two.
There you Steelers. Go. Named Steelers. These are the Red Line Steelers. Yeah. Anyway, I have to think people are falling for this right and left because it looks in every respect like a real thing. So just a word of warning. Tell your family and friends, people who don't. Yeah, anybody who listens to any of our shows is too sophisticated to fall for that, I think.
You'd think. I mean, I have to say though. I mean, with Microsoft, they're getting a lot. They learned from the Windows 10 experience in that even naggy though it is, it's less naggy than it was when Windows 10 came out. And they were trying to get everyone to upgrade, and they're not forcing stuff out on everyone. But yeah, I mean, looking at the screenshots of what they're putting out, it's very convincing stuff. And you know, I'm warning people. You know, warning my parents, just be careful on this one. Just leave it alone.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's who you have to talk to is normal people. I'm kind of an outlier here. I'm of the opinion no normal person should be using Windows. If you're not willing to be a security expert, if you're not strongly motivated because, I don't know, well, you need it for work or you're a gamer and you're not willing to really kind of keep your eye out for stuff like this, you should be using a Chromebook you shouldn't be using Windows. It's too risky. That's annoying when I say that.
The problem is that a Chromebook or an iPad is a wonderful substitute for a desktop operating system until it isn't. and then you're really, really hosed. When the only way you can register for COVID testing, they're assuming that you've got an actual like desktop grade browser and desktop grade operating system. That's a problem. iPad's more of a problem than Chromebooks, but again, it's a great solution until it actually isn't. They're getting better, but it's still a problem.
Okay. I guess my philosophy is, I tell people, okay, don't buy Windows, but if you do, don't call me.
Yeah, there's still going to be a lot of problems.
They're still
going to
call you,
Macs,
aren't they?
Well.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean it's not as pure as it once was. I used to make the exact same thing. I would say great, if you're looking for a laptop, I'll help you. If you buy, I used to be I'll give you like three service calls on Windows, unlimited on Mac. And I stopped joking about that because I was not willing to help people, friends and family, but because I thought in modern times it gives people an maybe inaccurate picture of how, you know, of how much stable and how much more secure and safe a Mac is. It used to be that, wow, there just is no malware out there for the Mac. Oh, wow, there's just almost
there really is
nothing to think about. Yeah. So you can't be careful.
I think general purpose operating systems, which of course have their place, that's how computing began, but they're general purpose. They're designed to let you do what you want to do. Yeah. And that is inherently risky. And I don't think most people need more than a Chromebook. I mean, yes, you're right. If you suddenly say, I've decided I'm going to create the next Oscar-winning film, you might need something more than a Chromebook. But most people just browse the web and do email and buy things on, you know, overstock.com. I mean, I don't think they need Windows. And if that's all you do, You shouldn't. But I know. Go ahead. Everybody yells at me.
You have to remember that companies dictate what computer systems you use at work, and a lot of professions still usually run on one dedicated app, and a lot of those are written for Windows.
No, and I agree, right?
Especially in the medical community.
But in that case, you probably have an IT department. If you don't have an IT department, you are the IT department. And you're
That doesn't mean it makes it easier if your Windows is compromised or you haven't updated that month's security update. And then there's an exploit. There's still pain involved.
There's pain. There's pain if you listen to KUOW in Seattle and you're driving a 2016 Mazda. There's pain in life. Life is full of pain. This is kind of a hysterical problem. Mazda's entertainment system apparently is not sanitizing its inputs. And Mazda's, from 2014 to 2017, have this problem discovered by Mazda owners in Seattle who are forced, I tell you, to listen to the local NPR station. they tuned it in, and in this case, the station was sending, there now is this new system where a station can send additional information over the airwaves, like album art or song titles and stuff, and radios now will display the song title. Well, apparently Mazda, it was written in such a way that when the image files came in and they didn't have extensions, it bricked the infotainment system, and you're stuck on KUOW. This is not new, though. Apparently, there's a podcast, 99% Invisible podcast, that had the same problem because they have a percent sign in their name. And it was also bricking Mazdas. So they made a Mazda-safe feed for their podcast that was 99 PERCENT instead. So this is not a new problem. This is not an unknown problem. The question is, who's going to fix those Mazdas? Because they're out of warranty.
Yeah. I mean, okay, we love the story because it gave us a great subhead. Video killed the radio staff that just came and broke your car.
thank you. The Register is a gift that just keeps on giving, I tell you.
But I mean, it does seem at this point like it's going to be almost impossible to fix. They're going to have to order in new components with the supply chain issues. That's going to be a massive delay if they can actually get the components in themselves. So it's just one of those embedded tech problems, which is the bedevilment of the industry.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also another sort of timely story that here in the United States, the 3G cellular networks towers are being shut down, starting with AT&T on the 22nd of this month.
Oh yeah, get ready.
Which is Which is not a problem for users of phones, but the thing is, most of the digital connections to the network that are happening through cars are through cheap 3G modems. And if the solution to this problem would be, oh, well, no problem, we'll just push out a software update. Well, guess what? That 3G tower you're going to need, you're going to have to drive somewhere where there is still a 3G tower in order to connect to have your car automatically connect to that server, or take the car into a service center just to have them apply a software patch. And given how much more complex not just the entertainment console software is, but also just the software that keeps an engine running and keeps an engine tuned properly, is how many more billions of lines of code are being into this sort of stuff. This could start to be a problem. Things that used to work automatically and the user just didn't understand that, hey, overnight while you were parked, you received a very, very critical software update. Now your car is dead and your service center will say, oh, well, we'll cost you $300 for a new 4G radio, or gosh, it's a 10-year-old car anyway, why don't you just buy a brand new car? This is difficult, to say the least.
Sanitize your inputs, boys and girls.
Yes.
What I will say, though, is I'm a big fan of 99% Invisible. And so I recommend that if you haven't listened to that podcast, they have a great one on how Goodnight Moon was not distributed at the New York Public Library for a very long time because the librarian there was setting the taste for all libraries in the United States about what children's books they should listen to. So,
they banned Goodnight Moon?
They just didn't offer it or put it on the recommended list. The woman who was the librarian and who was like this industry figure, but 99% Invisible did a podcast about it called Goodnight Nobody. And those of us who have kids who have memorized Goodnight Moon.
Me too. Yep.
We're just like, what? So go listen to it. It's worth your time. It's
a great. I've never even heard of Goodnight Moon, but looking at it, this is a huge piece of cultural history.
You don't have kids. Connie and I don't know about you, Connie, but I went through probably 40 copies of Goodnight Moon until I found there's one that's a board book, or maybe it was fabric, and Abby couldn't tear the pages out of it as we went.
Ian, you should just go up to YouTube and type in Goodnight Moon, and the parodies of it are incredible. Yeah.
Oh,
Samuel
really?
Jackson has a great one.
Fantastic. Careful on that one. Yes.
Yeah, that's not safe for work, but Goodnight Moon is definitely a cultural institution to all of us kids.
Margaret
Weisbrand. Only been here a dozen years, but I'm still getting used to this kind of stuff. I mean, I'd never even heard of the Cat in the Hat till I came over here. So it's just, yes, it is a cultural divide.
Sammy, we had a couple of years in a row, we did a 24-hour New Year's Eve telecast, and that was the closer one year. I read Goodnight Moon to a group of small children and got in a lot of trouble. The Samuel L. Jackson version.
that probably should have been vetted.
Yeah, maybe the librarian was right, at least in that case. No, that's great. I'll have to listen. 99% Invisible, excellent podcast. Yep. Do not listen in a 2016 Mazda. Otherwise, you're good. You're fine. Speaking of bugs, Elon Musk got bit by a solar storm last week. The story from theregister.com. SpaceX launched, even though the space weatherman predicted tricky conditions. Wait a minute. There's a space weatherman, Ian?
Oh, we have space. We have satellites out between us and the sun now, thank goodness, which will predict when solar storms are coming in and give us the 2 days' notice we need to lock down transformers and take preventative action. In this case, it was more that solar activity hit the Earth. This causes the atmosphere to expand slightly. And because these satellites were in such a low orbit, that dramatically increased the amount of drag that they were undergoing. And yes, 40 out of the 49 either have already fallen to Earth or are on their way back down.
Wow. Now, you have to put that in perspective. SpaceX is manufacturing 100 of these a week.
Yeah,
and launching them as fast as they can, so a certain percentage of loss is not the end of the world.
also they're in low orbit, which is the basically before they transition to their permanent orbits, they put into low orbits partly for this reason, so that if during the checkout they discover that this satellite's not going to work out, they can very easily just deorbit it and put it into the ocean before it becomes like permanent addition to our collection of space junk. But that ties into kind of another news story from last week, where right now there are about 1,700 Starlink satellites in orbit. They want permission to go into the tens of thousands, and now the world science community is basically saying, yeah, we kind of don't want 40,000 new objects, basically a multiple of the number of orbiting objects around our planet at the moment, to be there to service one company's profits. Perhaps that will have an impact on our ability to not only put our own spacecraft into orbit, but also to just see beyond our own planet. Perhaps you should just tap the brakes on that, Elon.
I talked to somebody living in rural Texas, who has no internet access at all, and she just got her satellite. She's so excited about Starlink. Go ahead, Connie. What did you think we were going to talk about?
I thought you were going to mention Elon Musk because of all the Tesla recalls. Because, wasn't there three or four last week? But that's another story. We can do that another day.
Elon is the gift that just keeps on giving to tech journalists. It's on the one hand, he's nuts. On the other hand, he's incredibly brilliant. And I don't know. It's so...
That's a combination that always works out great for humanity.
Well, we do know, if you saw the movie, the Netflix movie, now nominated for an Oscar, Don't Look Up, that the evil billionaire genius, Mark Rylance, who plays that character in the movie, admitted now, yes, it's based on Elon Musk. I thought maybe there was a little Mark Zuckerberg thrown in there for a good measure.
With Elon, the Germans have a great word for it, which is Faschidiot, which is someone who is absolutely superb in their specialist area and then ignorant as hell about other things. But, with the SpaceX thing, to their credit, I interviewed Don Kessler, he of the Kessler Effect, a few years back, and he was like, SpaceX are actually pretty good about...
Yes. Pretty
planning
good.
To deorbit this stuff.
In a way that
many national governments aren't. But I'm totally with you on this. The amount of problems this is causing astronomers, and the potential problems if it all goes wrong. Somebody needs to stop and say, look, have you really thought this one through, other than with your own company's interests?
Well, we know. NASA said the International Space Station is going to deorbits the word they use, sometime in the next 10 years, probably 2030 or later. But they learned from Skylab. Remember in the late 70s, Skylab's orbit started to decay, and then nobody had thought about it. Nobody had planned. So all they could do was let it crash. They figured, well, it's mostly water, so we're probably all right. And in fact, it crashed in Australia, but that's another story for another day. I think they learned the lesson, and so now there is enough, juice to deorbit it in such a way that it will crash into the Pacific.
Go ahead. I think you're about to say what I was going to say.
There's an effort to clean up space debris. Is that what you're going to say, Andy? And that the U.S. is very far behind. We put up a lot of junk, but we've been really bad about taking it down.
We're number one.
So I know that there are private companies that want to go drag some of these space parts into low orbit so they supposedly burn up on reentry. But that sounds like a bad plan, too.
Well, I think it was a business, right? A British company is proposing a giant giant space net it's the remove debris satellite, it's a giant space net it's actually been deployed to capture space junk. It's from Airbus. Thank you very much.
Combining the cutting-edge bus technology to new unprecedented aerodynamics. For years now, there have been satellites. China started launching satellites, I think, in 2016 that have been testing grappling features so that it can actually interact with other satellites, move them into different orbits, pull them out of orbit if necessary. And a lot of the a lot of the conversation has been, oh, this, there's going to be new wars in space in which we attack each other's satellites. I know that's, and I know that's actually that's a likely possibility for, in the grand scheme of things. But also, this is a necessary technology. We need the ability to simply say, when there's a conflict between two spacecraft, one of which is derelict, we need an ability, and we need an ability to deal with it that doesn't simply come down to, the spacecraft has to get out of the way. There's a, what was it, two, 3 years ago, where there was another incident. I wish I could remember the actual details, but the Air Force that was tracking all this information basically gave a warning to the operators of one spacecraft that, look, you're basically about to crash into something else. And because there was no specific no chain of orders in place to say that, look, if you are operating a spacecraft, you have to have somebody manning a station so that if we send you this warning, somebody gets it, somebody puts it into the right hands, and you take action. But unfortunately, it sat in somebody's inbox for 3 or 4 days, and a certain amount of emergency action had to be taken to avoid a crash that would have put a whole bunch of new debris into space.
Isn't that the plot for the movie Gravity? Sandra Bullock?
Yes, exactly. She gets hit by space debris.
Oh, that film drives me nuts. I mean, as a space geek, it's just like, really, you can transfer orbits that easily, just use it. But anyway, but I mean, it is a massive problem. The
ISS, she's Sandra Bullock. She can do anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not as bad as Armageddon, which rumor has it is still shown to potential NASA employees to find out how many inaccuracies you can get. And the record is, as I understand it, is 167.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, you clearly haven't screened Space Camp, which I saw with a bunch with a collection.
Oh, that's
of,
hilariously
like,
bad!
In my Polytechnic University. People
hey,
who are, like,
Moonfall yeah. is now at the top of the don't watch list for me.
It does look kind of dodgy, doesn't it?
From what I hear from a lot of people, it's bad and it's crazy, but it's like National Treasure level bad, where they know that they're going nuts here and they're leaning into it. And like, if only they had Nicolas Cage in there, then the people would understand, okay, look, we know the science here is wonky. We're just having a good time here.
It's kind of the same plot, isn't it? Although this time it's the moon, not an asteroid, right?
True.
Yeah.
This is the moon breaking up. This one that I...
Yeah, Halle Berry, like yes. Neil, Patrick
this
Wilson.
This seemed like a Neil Stevenson plot.
Yeah.
But
it's a movie where there is a line, I need you to help me get in touch with NASA. Right now, the moon is out of orbit.
Yeah, it's got a twist. The moon is not what you think, because I actually have seen it. And I interviewed the director, Roland Emmerich, this past week, because he's the guy who wrote Independence Day.
Yeah.
And he's done a bunch of movies, and it is ridiculous.
I've seen so many bad reviews, and yet I really want to see it. They tried to explain it. Yeah. Don't watch the trailer. It's a spoiler alert. I'm not going to say anything. Connie, now I understand what you're talking about.
Yes.
Hang on, wasn't Roland Emmerich the one who did 2012, the film?
He did Day After Tomorrow, which was the climate change one.
It was 2012, but, which was a true
Why did you see it,
film.
Connie? Let me ask you. And did you see it in the theater, more to the point?
No. I had the opportunity. I get to co-host a podcast for CNET called I'm So Obsessed. And we talk to actors, directors, other creative types. And I was able to screen it ahead of time in my living room. And then I talked to the director, Roland Emmerich.
Nice.
A couple of days before it was launched. So,
good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'll watch anything because I'm stuck at home with anybody.
Because you're so obsessed. That's why. You know who's obsessed is the 19-year-old teenager Jack Sweeney, who tweets the location of Elon Musk's jet, which he points out on his Twitter feed is completely legal. Elon doesn't like it so much and has offered him all sorts of things. Jack says, I want a car. It started as a hobby, and I don't want to let go of a hobby for something that's not going to really change my life. I don't have a car right now. It would be great to have a car, and a Tesla would be really cool.
And so Elon blocked him.
Yeah. Well, Elon said it's a security issue. I guess it is, but it's public information. It's not, this is all, you know, in the public database. So Elon apparently offered him
$5,000. Now, I should point out Elon Musk is the richest man in the world, worth $224 billion. If I were Jack, might be insulted by $5,000. A car wouldn't be too much to ask. He also tracks the private jets from Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, and Donald Trump. So, if you know, follow him on the Twitter, Elon Jet.
Can I say that if the guy is smart, he'll ask for an electric car that's a little bit better made than a Tesla. that treats its employees a little bit better.
That would be the height of irony, is to say, Elon, I want a car, but anything but a Tesla, okay?
those panel gaps, I just can't. I can't even. I don't want to be made fun of at Cars and Coffee.
Oh, my God. Little break.
Oh, no, I mean.
No. I'm going to make you take a break. Go have some Marmite or whatever it is you... British people.
That's very nationalist of you.
Why
don't you go and eat a Twinkie?
If I'm going to eat, the effluent from a brewery, I'm going to eat Vegemite. I mean, I'm just saying, given the choice.
I've tried so hard with you, Leon. Leo, I don't know where to start. Vegemite is sickly sweet. It's horrible stuff.
Is it? Is it sweet? It seems salty, but you're saying...
They put caramel in it. I mean, compared to proper Marmite, they put caramel in it.
Now, that's
a
good
idea. The big difference.
That's a good idea.
It's really not. But anyone, to each their own, you know.
I was present at the dismantling of the Marin Brewing Company, which had failed for some reason in Marin, and watching them cart out the used hops or whatever it is, the debris at the bottom of the vats. And I thought, dude.
Oh, the wort, yeah.
The wort? You call it wort?
Brewer's wort, yes.
Brewer's wort. W-O-R-T?
I believe so, yes. I would need to check.
Is that what Marmite is made of?
Well, that's it's the remains of the yeast that's gone through various different... things, which makes it vegetarian-friendly as well, but...
I almost shouted out to the guys, you're missing a bet here. We need an American Marmite. You know, this is your shot. Anyway.
I don't know. It doesn't seem to work over here. My wife, to her credit, tried it twice and then said never again.
I have two jars, one of Vegemite, one of Marmite, in my cupboard at home, and I've had them for years for some reason. They don't seem to be going anywhere.
Well, it never goes off, so... You know.
It never goes bad, just like Brewer's Wort. Our show today brought to you by Checkout.com. Tech, my friends, should not stifle innovation. Traditional payment systems can really, you know, be heavily layered, disconnected. And I think most businesses see them as a cost center, right? Modern businesses need a flexible payment system that can help them adapt to change, to grow, and to scale fast. And I can tell you, there's a company with tech that has a brand new, radical new way of thinking about this. It's Checkout.com. Well named. Checkout.com. They partnered with Oxford Economics, conducted an end-to-end analysis of the payments value chain for merchants. Last year alone in the UK, the US, and France, and Germany too, false declines, not real ones, but declines for a spurious reason cost markets $20.3 billion. What happens after you get a false decline? Most people just go to competitors. $12.7 billion went to competitors, $7.6 billion entirely written off. The sale is no sale, bye-bye, see you later. And how many times have you and I done that, right? The study found merchants that are not currently optimizing the consumer's willingness to pay. We are there pressing the pay button for speed, convenience, and security online are missing the boat. Unfortunately, the majority of merchants that they surveyed in this Oxford Economics study don't feel payments data is informing their business strategy or their innovation. 56% of customers said they won't return to a site if they don't offer their preferred payment method. That should scare you a little bit. Most merchants spend more than 10% of their payments budget on stupid stuff, fixing disputes, fraud, outages, stuff you can avoidable expenses. 10%. CEOs are more likely to overestimate the quality of the data returned to them by payment providers. It's not as good as you think. CEOs tend to underestimate the extent to which disconnected payments are hindering growth. Most merchants focus on the per transaction cost of their payments and ignore the back end costs. Checkout.com solves these problems. They're a leading cloud-based global payment solution provider. Checkout's payment platform purpose-built with performance, scalability, and speed in mind. That's ideal for merchants looking to seamlessly integrate better payment solutions globally. Ideal for your customers, too. Checkout.com offers improved acceptance globally and better and more actionable granular data. A flexible product structure that you can adapt to your needs, and it's combined with real white glove service. Truly personal. That's why Pizza Hut uses a Klarna, Revolut, Samsung. Trust Checkout.com. Learn how to optimize your authorization rates with Checkout's free guide to better payments performance. This guide is full of expert advice and merchant insights to fast-track your path to unrivaled payments performance. Checkout.com. As a customer, you love it because it's fast, it's easy, and it takes everything you want to use as payment. As a business, you'll love it because you don't lose money, big money, on false declines and so many other things. Request a free no commitment demo at checkout.com/twit. You're going to love checkout.com. Request a free no commitment demo. checkout.com/twit. checkout.com/twit. Payments for a digital economy. John, can you tell me what I'm seeing on the Super Bowl screen? It's just a bouncing QR code. Is this one of those dumb ads where they didn't want to spend any money on budget? There's no audio. It's just bouncing around. Oh, it's a Coinbase ad. How about that? That'll get some attention. They literally spent $6.5 million to put a bouncing QR code on your screen for 30 seconds. And we were talking just about this, right? The money these guys have. Unbelievable.
Oh, God. I hope against hope that it takes you to a Rick Astley video.
That would be a points for style for sure on that.
Good one.
That would be hysterical.
Well, there was a lovely tweet this week where, because the Queen had made an announcement about Prince Charles, his wife Camilla, actually being Queen Camilla when the Queen passes on, but she was pictured next to a bunch of documents in her Queen's box which she reads to go through. And somebody, a security specialist, drove down and looked at what Photoshop could do to actually find out what these things. And then, and now we've revealed the final document, and it was never going to give you up, never going to let you down. Hey, it was a great payoff, but he was making a serious point.
We have with us our royalty watcher. Is the Queen okay? There's some worry because Charles has COVID, right? And he was with the Queen 2 days earlier, and she's 95. Congratulations, her platinum jubilee was last week. 70 years, the longest reigning monarch in the UK and history.
Longest reigning monarch in history, as I understand it.
But, 70 years. Well, we don't know. It might be Ozymandias.
Well, yes, true. But
still.
I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the womb system of government, but she is a game old bird. And she's done her best for the country.
Bird. Lisa said, Lisa told me you're very respectful of the Queen. That's why I thought you might be.
Honestly, if we're going to have a monarch, she's the best of a lot. Yeah, her idiot son, on the other hand, I'm having problems with. But yes, he is in lockdown with COVID-19. It's reported that Andrew is in lockdown with Mandy 17, but isn't coming out until Mumsy tells the police to go away.
That's a British joke, for those of you listening who say, what?
Yes, okay.
We have football, they have the royal family. You know.
I mean, it's she may be okay, but she's just lost her husband.
So.
And typically when older couples, when one of them dies, the other one dies within a year or so.
I know. She has a big family around her, lots of corgis. And the other thing that I think was reprehensible, Boris Johnson, who got dinged for holding all these parties at 10 Downing Street while the poor Queen has to sit all by herself at her husband's funeral.
Literally the day before her husband's funeral, they were having a party.
Yeah.
The day before. I mean, I've got, without wishing to get too personal, but myself and others have had people die over this this epidemic, and we couldn't go and see them. We couldn't go and give them comfort. And in one case, my aunt had to die in a hospice because she wasn't allowed to go home. I have yet to see British people this angry about something for quite some time, but Boris seems to be prepared to just brazen it out. He has no shame whatsoever.
By the way, that was a Coinbase QR code, and Twitter is going crazy right now. Here's a tweet from Neil Rule. Funny to watch my son scan that Coinbase QR code. The ad worked.
Did he actually manage to scan it, though? That's an awful lot of TV.
It worked. Coinbase is trending on Twitter right now, which is probably what they wanted. Here's a picture. Me when the Coinbase commercial came on.
Actually, some of the PR is coming across that that was actually directed by Ridley Scott.
No. Wow, he sold out.
Best ad of the Super Bowl. Here it is. Basically, I'll give him an extra. I'll only charge him $150 for this. There it is. The best ad of the Super Bowl, a bouncing QR code. We had a great week this week on Twitter. Let's take a look. We made a little mini movie to celebrate.
I have a question regarding iPads.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, I had to call you back. I have a man yelling at me.
Okay, yeah, go ahead. We don't want anybody yelling at you. Hey, what are you doing on the phone there? Get off the phone. Kim, just, you know, keep an ear out when he's done with the altercation.
Previously on Twit. Twit News.
Kind of the marquee device for the event, and the thing that I was looking forward to most was the S22 Ultra. This is, by all accounts, this is the next Note, right? It's a Note by a different name. It's the Galaxy S22 Ultra.
Tech News Weekly.
Oh my gosh, do we have the next Samsung phone in hand right now?
Oh my, no! You're so lucky. I'm so jealous.
This Week in Google.
Actually, feature writing dying is a symptom of a lot. I mean, there are still, by the way, there's still great feature writing. That's what The New Yorker does. It's
but far fewer outlets for it.
And I really do wonder if people are going to read long form anything in the years to come.
I think they'll have long form podcasts. They have long form.
Well, God knows we do those.
Yeah.
Twit. Those aren't even well researched. I mean, my goodness.
Are the new Harper's Monthly?
I'm glad you're not airing this right now.
Oh, is it bad? Is it getting bad? Are they swearing? This is actually better than hearing. It would upset my tummy to hear them actually fighting, but hearing your reaction is kind of fun. The guy called, this is the fun, the joy of live call-in radio. The guy was on Venice Beach. It was 88 degrees on Saturday on Venice Beach. He starts asking me a question, and some nut comes up and starts haranguing him. And Kim was actually doing a play-by-play, and apparently it got pretty profane. There was some I should just stop right now. Ian, article from the Register. You're doing a little writing. Chip shortages, sure, but it's a good time to be a silicon wafer maker.
Yeah, the revenues have, they've had their biggest bumper year since 2007 when, you know, the last big bubble broke. Yeah, it's a great time to be in silicon, but 2023 and 24 are going to be quite unpleasant times, I think, because oversupply is going to kick in at that point, particularly in things like 28 nanometer process stuff.
I worry because, everybody's building all this capacity. And by the way, not just, we talked about this last week, not just the Intels and the TSMCs of the world, but even the little legacy node factories are really ramping up because, you know, there's a huge demand. But when they're all online, what's gonna happen?
Well, I mean, in the long term, you know, the demand for processors and chip technology is only going to grow. But it's managing those peaks and troughs. And yes, there's been this enormous build function because of the chip shortages and the resulting supply chain issues. But yeah, the hangover is going to come, and it's a question of judging when and, you know, how you spend your money in terms of building new fabs, building new manufacturing processes.
Yeah. I'll tell you the business you don't want to be in: insuring VR headset claims. There's a British company called Aviva, British insurer, who apparently does sell, in fact, home insurance for damage caused by VR headsets. They say there's been a 31% jump in claims last year, and overall since 2016, a 68% jump. They cite a man who landed an uppercut on his ceiling fan. I don't know who got the worst of that. A woman slamming into furniture. A guy smashing through a lighting fixture. One child smashed two designer figurines. I'm thinking Hummels. Perched on the mantelpiece when his game demanded a swipe move. There go the Hummels flying. And honestly, the kid might have done it on purpose. I'm just thinking. But, you know, I'm just saying. One customer launched a controller to his TV when a zombie jumped out during the game. Ah! I can see you. I can do that. I can see you doing that. Aviva said, we did pay the claims, but they weren't warned. This is from Aviva's spokesperson. I want to say Dick Whittington, but it's Kelly Whittington. These devices can be a great source of fun, but we didn't. I'm sounding like the Geico Gecko, aren't I? But
I hey, y'all, what are you doing?
We'd encourage people to be mindful of their surroundings, Governor, and take a look at their home insurance to make sure it suits their needs. They got the plug in. The plug in. Not a surprise.
I'm going to say, rising 68%, given the very low statistical base of VR stuff before 2016,
it's not a surprise.
The end of the world.
Surprise. But the best thing I got out of that article was it turns out there is a subreddit, a forum on Reddit called VR to ER.
I need to see this now.
It's dedicated. I immediately subscribed, of course. It is dedicated to damage caused during VR accidents.
Yeah, does it have that picture of the Oculus controller like smashed? That's like just
embedded in the TV,
of a hole in drywall.
Yep.
Welcome to the metaverse.
Yeah. It's gonna be fun, isn't it?
Well, honestly, based on their results, Facebook need it to be fun because their cool market's dying on them.
I have to say, Facebook is not making it look fun.
No.
Now they've established...
It's like Second Life. Some of the stuff they've been putting out is sub-Second Life.
Well,
it's
and because
ridiculous.
Of that, they're worried now about VR harassment. So they're establishing a four-foot no-fly zone around every avatar so that you can't get harassed. Which isn't really that encouraging about, like, oh, good, well, I'm glad they did that because...
There have been a couple of incidents like that where and
digital
someone,
griefing, I guess.
Well, not just griefing, but in virtual reality avatars reaching out and touching people in a way that even through virtual reality they did not want to be touched.
Unwanted and touching. Show us on the avatar where he touched you.
Well,
have legs in virtual reality, so I don't know.
It's part of the development process of something that's brand new to society that it may not be something that was even considered a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But
then
when you put millions of people inside this environment, this is how it feels for some people who are maybe in real world being harassed and being victims of that sort of thing. It's that I do not need this. This is way, way too real. I do feel like it's a violation, even though it's just pixels. And so now how do you prosecute it? How do you ban it? How do you limit it? Now instead of 2,000 reasons why Meta has a really stupid idea for a pivot, add one more.
Connie, I'm going to let you get your smartphone ready for the QR code in the second half because we're gonna let you get to the football game in a second. But one last story, a big breakthrough, I think, for streaming in the Oscars. This week's Oscar nominations gave Netflix Power of the Dog, streaming-only movie, 12 nominations. Remember Steven Spielberg a few years ago saying, streaming movies shouldn't even be considered for Academy Awards. Apple got 6 nominations, including a Best Picture nomination for Coda. This is I think it is now clear, especially because of the pandemic, that streaming movies are movies. And there are quite a few, including, by the way, Don't Look Up, which was we were talking about, nominated for a Best Picture.
Yeah.
And that was Netflix only as well.
Yeah. See, this is significant because the budget for Coda was $10 million, $10 million.
Wow.
And it's a good example of the sort of movies that people used to be a lot of actors and a lot of producers used to be complaining that we can't sell a movie that costs less than X hundreds of millions of dollars because the market for movies in theaters right now is that by the time you add in marketing, by the time you add in distribution, it has to make a huge pile of money before it can recoup its funding back. And so a lower budget or a mid-tier budget movie, which is usually what you're talking about when you're talking about a straight-on drama where people are just going to go in there and act the hell out of the screenplay, that kind of aces all of them out. So it's not surprising at all that the streaming services that are largely entice creators with, look, if you're going to be making us a movie for $10, $20, $30 million, we will write you the check. You get to make the movie that you want. Here are some rules that we want you to follow, but we're not going to have someone on set every single moment advising you on what you should and shouldn't do. This is sort of like the gold rush almost for in terms of awards and prestige for these smaller tier movies. So that might be the salvation for
I'd love that.
Drama.
And let's bring back theaters eventually. And maybe they can benefit as well, the small indie theaters and art cinemas.
Yeah. Theater has to become a communal activity again.
I agree.
You have to watch a movie as an audience, not just for the big picture, not just for the great sound, but there's something about the cheering that happens even in an action movie where somebody picks up the weapon that from off screen and suddenly enters the battle that you realize that this is why I paid $12 for, not the effects, but because one of 200 people cheering like hell at a static image.
This is a weirdly American thing, because if you did that in the UK, you would be considered incredibly rude.
And really?
I went to see the last
And yet you guys all rise to your feet at the end of the movie to sing God Save the Queen.
Oh, please. Well, that said, whenever I do hear the national anthem, I get the urge to stand. But yes, it's...
Do they still do that at movie theaters? This is a long time ago when I was in the UK. I don't think they still do that. They used to play the national anthem at the end of a movie.
They used to play the national anthem every night when the TV shut down at midnight.
Yeah, we did that too.
Back when TVs did shut down.
TVs don't shut down anymore. That's the problem.
Yeah, I will say, I hope theaters come back too. My favorite movie event was watching Galaxy Quest with an audience here in the Bay Area. And at the end of Galaxy Quest, every single fan stood up and applauded, including myself. Oh, so that is a moment.
But isn't that great?
Yes, it is a recognition that the streaming services and their investment in studio production, you know, is countering the Hollywood, you have to have $100 million budget. And we want to see that. I mean, I think the day that we get an Oscar-nominated movie that was shot on an iPhone or on a Samsung phone is the day that we really sit down and go, what? Holy cow.
But yeah. Do you think that day will come?
I do. I think movies are storytelling, right? Yeah. And it's about compelling characters and stories. And I think I'm a big movie buff. Don't get me wrong. I will watch anything. Moonfall was $140 million.
Wow.
Largest budget for an independent movie ever raised. I liked Coda, which $10 million. But I think that it's the creativity of the work. And if you're relying on big budget special effects, and that's a complaint of a lot of movies, right? The story was mad, but oh my God, they look at that explosion from 50 different angles.
Yeah.
So it will allow you to experiment, and I do think that day is coming.
And you can use this in I'm So Obsessed if you want. I really think movies are the original VR, the VR that works. Yeah, you're not wearing a helmet, but you're in a darkened room with a bunch of other people. There's music to make your heart move. There's pictures on the screen that make you gasp. A good movie takes you away. It transports you into a different space. That's virtual reality.
It's 4D when they throw popcorn at you. So.
Connie Guglielmo, I'm So Obsessed on CNET. She's editor-in-chief at CNET.com. February 2nd, Roland Emmerich. That's a good interview. I'm going to have to listen to that. That's a great get. Wow. How cool is that? Anything else you want to mention that you're up to, Connie?
No, I'm going to go and see what that silly
QR code
that is.
I hope they do it in the second half, too. I wonder. Will they spend $13 million for a bouncing QR code? That's the only question. Thank you, Connie. It's really great to have you.
My pleasure.
Andy Iannacco, I'm going to see you on Tuesday. He's one of our hosts on Mac Break Weekly, also appears on WGBH Boston every week and does the Material podcast on Relay.fm, which is ironically all about Android. You cover the waterfront.
All about Google.
Yep. All about Google.
I'm ecumenical. I embrace crazy technology of all faiths.
Always a pleasure. It's great to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And Ian Thompson, news editor. I'm sorry. U.S. editor now.
It's all the same.
It's all the same. There's only three people. It's the Register. No, I'm kidding. It's the Register.com. It's a great publication, which we quote every single week. Great to have you, Ian. I'm only sorry that your wife took the car and we didn't get to have a...
Ah, no, she's boogie boarding on Stinson Beach at the moment.
Oh, I'm man.
About to head out to the pub. So,
oh, you know, man. It's... Yeah, summer came early in California. It's weird, actually.
It is.
I hope you all have a wonderful Valentine's Day tomorrow, and I thank you all for joining us the day before. We do twit on a lovely Sunday afternoon right after the radio show. Usually it's around 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern, 22:30 UTC. If you want to watch us do it live, we stream live audio and video at live.twit.tv. If you're watching live, you can chat with us live. There's two places to do that. Of course, the IRC, open to all, irc.twit.tv, and our fabulous Discord. The folks in the Discord are members of Club Twit. $7 a month gets you ad-free versions of all of our shows, access to the Discord with such great animated gifts as this, God Save the Queen, and you also get the Twit Plus feed, which we're doing, thanks to the members of the club who are kind of subsidizing this, some new stuff. It's given us the chance to do This Week in Space with Rod Pyle, our space guy from the National Space Society, and his co-host, Tarek Malik, from space.com. They talk about space every week. And, of course, the Untitled Linux Show, Jonathan Bennett, the host of that, Stacey Higginbotham's book club every month. There's the Giz Fizz with Dick D. Bartolo every week. There's also special events and interviews. Coming up February 24th, Oh Doctor. Ah, and Ask Me Anything with Owen J.J. Stone, Aunt Pruitt, our community manager, will host. That should be something. That should be amazing, in fact. Thank you, Owen, for doing that. And thank you, Aunt, for doing that. And thank you, club members, for making it possible. All you have to do is go to twit.tv/clubtwit. By the way, we do have corporate memberships. We want to welcome yet another corporate membership, another company, buying subscriptions for their employees. That warms me. That warms my heart. Thank you for your support. If you want to watch the show after the fact, of course, there's free versions, ad-supported versions of everything else we do available at our website, twit.tv. There's a YouTube channel for all of the Twit shows. If you want to watch the video there, you certainly can. My favorite thing to do, though, subscribe in a podcast player, and that way you can get it automatically. You don't even have to think about it, and watch or listen at your leisure. And if your podcast player supports reviews, please leave us a 5-star review. The longest continuous running tech podcast in the world, now in its 17th year. Thanks for joining us all. 17 years I've been saying it. I'll say it again. Another twit
this
is in the can.
Bye bye.
Doing the twit.
Doing the twit, baby.
Doing the twit.
All right.
Doing the twit, baby.